Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 19th of November, Anno Domini 2016, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Steve Ray will be joining us as soon as he evades the law.
I don't see him coming up the sidewalk yet.
In. He's a little
he's
late
on
today. He's on his way.
In transit.
There's a song there somewhere. Listen, beginning December 1st, the U.S. surveillance state will expand, all without a congressional vote. Earlier this year, a new federal rule of criminal procedure was amended after 3 years of study by an unelected advisory committee. It was signed by the U.S. Supreme Court and allows judges to sign warrants to allow authorities to hack into computers outside a judge's jurisdiction. Rule 41 also grants judges the power to use one warrant to search multiple computers anywhere instead of requiring warrants for each computer. Absent the rule, federal judges may only authorize electronic searches within their own judicial district. While this may seem bureaucratic or like a technicality, in practice, the new rule will have a big impact on investigating cyber crime, according to the Justice Department. Evidence has been suppressed in some child pornography prosecutions because a Virginia magistrate allowed the FBI to seize and operate the Tor hidden site Playpen for 13 days. Investigators also deployed malware that disrupted Tor's privacy protections and revealed more than 1,000 true IP addresses, which led to 137 prosecutions nationwide. In a few of these prosecutions, judges tossed cases because of the jurisdictional rule that 41 now cures. For example, if agents are investigating criminals who are sexually exploiting children and uploading videos of that exploitation for others to see, but concealing their locations through anonymizing technology, agents will be able to apply for a search warrant to discover where they are located, according to Leslie Caldwell, the Assistant Attorney General. Months-old proposed legislation to thwart the new rule, which can lead to the wanton surveillance of innocent people, has gone nowhere, meaning the changeover will likely take place on December 1st. Civil rights groups and a handful of lawmakers are opposed to the new measure because a warrant would not have to say with any particularity who and what the authorities are searching for, and the requirement that the government provide the target with a notice that a search took place presents new challenges. Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, is backing proposed legislation to unwind Rule 41. It hasn't gotten a committee hearing, and neither has a House companion bill. The proposals have been dead on arrival. Wyden, however, claims that such a dramatic policy change should be decided by Congress, not an unelected advisory committee working in conjunction with the Supreme Court. For law enforcement to conduct a remote electronic search, they generally need to hack a device, Wyden wrote recently about the new rule. These rule changes will allow the government to search millions of computers with the warrant of a single judge. To me, that's clearly a policy change that's outside the scope of an administrative change and is something that Congress should consider. For now, no changes have been enacted, and the deadline is ticking before Rule 41 becomes a law. Our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is: in 2 weeks, it will be easier for Uncle Sam to search your computer. And the choices are: great, I feel safer already. What could possibly go wrong? I'm okay because I'm a good guy. And great, who needs civil liberties anyway? So far, great, who needs civil liberties anyway, has 14 votes. Out of 19, 74%. So, yeah, I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right-hand side underneath the search bar, you'll see forums. And under fascinating stuff, you'll see forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, the first poll discussion is 19 November 16. In 2 weeks, it will be easier for Uncle Sam to search your compute. Apparently, I left out the R. Five people have already posted. Please feel free to join us there. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Now, I wonder how that's going to work on our Chromebooks.
Well, that's exactly right.
That's all I use now to get on the internet is my Chromebook.
Right.
At home. The other two computers don't go out to the internet.
Right. I don't know. That's a good question. It's an interesting issue because there are many pieces and parts to this. One is a civil liberties issue. The other is a safety and security issue.
Mm-hmm.
And those are always at odds.
Oh, big time.
The big thing is you have to understand the scope of this. It would allow a judge in Oregon to authorize, without your knowledge, somebody searching your computer. So that's the part that people aren't objecting to most of the bill. What they're objecting to is the ability for a judge in Oregon, without a warrant, essentially, to say without probable cause, because they don't know you, to search your computer. Well, this guy...
What happens if they have, somebody with the same name. In here in the city, there's two Dave Enrights. Right. I'm David K, and there's the other one, David J.
Right.
And that's why I go put K on everything, because at one point they were looking for David J.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Well, but see, this is going to be even worse. So, for example, you're on Frontier.
Mm-hmm.
It is perfectly plausible now for a judge in Florida, Oregon, Texas, to say one person who has a Frontier IP has been convicted of child pornography. We better look at everybody on Frontier.
Mm.
And send out that warrant. Now, will that happen? I don't know.
Yeah.
There are so many judges who do not understand the scope of the internet and what it all means. So if
they're lucky they get on there and get into their own email sometimes.
That's exactly right. So it is certainly a possibility that somebody could say to a judge, look, we had this one guy Frontier. Now the judge is going to think, okay, how many people can be on Frontier? 30? 12?
1,000?
Right.
At a given moment?
Right, thousands. But that's not what the judge will understand.
No.
So, because this, you don't require anything like probable cause anymore, and because you certainly don't require a specific warrant, we may see a lot of this stuff going on.
Should be interesting.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Better,
Steve has joined us, the late Steve Ray.
The customers kept coming into the store, darn them.
Unbelievable. What were they thinking?
Yeah, really? Don't they know you got a show to do?
But on this topic, there already was a case, and that may be what prompted some of this law. There was a warrant issued for a suspected drug house, and the warrant was basically, we want to search the house. And anyone who happens to be in the house forced them to unlock their phone.
Right.
So we can look at the contents of the phone.
Right.
They didn't give specific names. Anyone who happened to be in the house.
Right.
So the warrants are getting vaguer and vaguer. They probably were trying to avoid a, the phone, San Bernardino phone.
Right.
Where they couldn't log into it. So forcing someone to log into their phone. But yeah, if you just happen to be walking by. We kind of had that happen to one of our salespeople. He was making a sales call in a strip mall, and the police happened to raid one of the businesses that he happened to be making a sales call at. No, I'm here's my card. I'm just here to try to sell them computers. Don't arrest me, please.
Right. And now it would be perfectly acceptable for them to take his phone, force him to unlock it, or throw him in jail. And look at it. So, yeah, like I said, there's both sides to this story, and it'll be interesting to see what will happen. And, of course, the people who say, well, I'm a good guy, so it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that you're a good guy. They can do what they want now.
And you can get caught up, you know, if you happen to be standing next to a bad guy. You can accidentally get caught up in the sweep.
Right, right. And so if somebody in your apartment building is a bad guy, they can then check your machine too. Take it away. Do what they want with it.
Dangerous.
I was in court once for a minor traffic ticket, and we were just chatting with a bunch of people, you know, sitting next to us in the seat, waiting our turn. And the lawyer came in and said, you know, apologize to the court, because all the lawyer cases are supposed to be first, and then they did the traffic cases. The lawyer apologized to the court, I'm late, you know, can we hear my case now? And the judge said, oh, okay. So they call this guy on attempted rape charges.
Ah, yeah.
And the guy we were sitting next to chatting with got up and walked to the front.
Uh-huh.
Holy crap!
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Oops. Yep.
Dang.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So, at any rate, that's the deal there, and it's, that, you know, people are falling on both sides of that issue, and I get it. Mm-hmm. I don't deny that that's...
it's a double-edged sword.
Right.
You know, it's going to cut both ways. It's going to have its good points. It's going to have its bad. There's going to be some incidents probably where they overstepped their bounds, and then others where, you know, they didn't do enough.
Right. So. Right. And, you know, it depends on your past, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an old hippie, so I fall on the side of personal freedom because I'm an American, but I guess... It is what it is for whoever it is.
Well, like we were talking there before we came on the show about the legalization of marijuana, how so many states in that are legalized.
20 states now have legalized it.
And making many millions.
Many for recreational uses in addition to medical use.
Yeah.
I just read an interesting conspiracy theory on that. It's actually Big Tobacco is pushing these bills so that they can start growing tobacco and pushing all the little guys out of growing marijuana and pushing all the little guys out of business again.
Yeah. What I really hope is that once we have lessened the problems with marijuana, the legal issues with marijuana, that people will start growing hemp again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because hemp, while it is not in fact marijuana,
mm-hmm.
Has many, many uses.
Rope and everything else.
Well, you make great rope out of it. It the oil
for a long time.
The oil can be turned into a fuel, much cheaper than the corn based ethanol that they make now. You can eat the seeds.
Just think of it. If you get the fumes off the car driving hemp oil, get it in, sit high.
Hemp is not marijuana, and it does not have the cannabinoids that make you high. It just doesn't have them.
Yeah, but you could add them in. You do it as
well. Yes, you could add them in. Yeah, I suppose you could do that to regular gasoline. But
and then have a leaky exhaust into your car.
Right, but that's the problem. People conflate marijuana with hemp, and they are certainly relatives, but they're not the same thing. It's like aloe and what is it? Orchids are cousins, but they're, you know, you wouldn't confuse them. But so I get it. I do get it. The problem, of course, has always been that they look so much alike that the growing of hemp was prohibited so that people couldn't hide marijuana plants.
Yeah, in
there. But now in the places where it is legal to grow it, why not start growing hemp again?
Yeah, good point. Yeah, good point.
Because, you know, we talk about renewable energy and we're still an oil-based economy. If you can replace oil, when this is, of course, why it'll never happen because...
big oil companies.
Yeah, big oil companies are, you know, they've got legislators in their pockets left and right. But think of how that would be in terms of replacing the oil in your car with an easily and quickly renewable resource like the ethanol that can be made from hemp. Anyway, look, we're going to take a quick... Let's get back on computer stuff. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites and the truly great and truly grateful to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Pat from Webster, New York on the line. What's up, Pat?
Hi, how's everyone doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, good, good, good. Listen, I have a question. I'm running Dell with Windows 7, and I have an issue with updates. The other day, yeah. I ran looking for updates. It was over 20 hours and didn't find anything, so I gave up.
Yeah.
Am I missing something, or?
Well, you're missing Windows 10.
Yeah.
Oh. Is what you're missing. Microsoft has stopped updating Windows 7.
Oh, really?
Except for severe security updates.
Okay.
When was the last update that worked?
I did some in August, and there was no problem.
Okay. There was a huge change in October.
Yep.
Okay. Nick. I heard something on one of your programs about the second Tuesday of every month, so that doesn't hold true anymore, right?
Not for Windows 7, it doesn't. Here's the deal. excuse me. Windows 7 support, mainstream support, ended on January 13th, 2015.
Okay.
Now, extended support is January 14th, 2020, but extended support is for people who pay. If you're not paying for support from Microsoft,
really,
you're not getting support from Microsoft.
Oh, okay, so I shouldn't waste my time then on updates, correct?
Well, it's not. You're not getting them. It also means, by the way, that you have missed several important system updates.
Oh, okay.
If you don't go to Windows 10, you're going to start falling farther and farther behind. And, in fact, Microsoft has stated that with the end of mainstream support, they're only going to push, what do they call it, severe security?
Critical
security fixes. And so any of the not critical security fixes, which are still dangerous, you know, to be unprotected, you're not getting them.
Okay. You said Windows 10. How about that great Chromebook that you own?
I love my Chromebook. My Chromebook.
Okay.
So it depends on what you do with your computer as to whether or not a Chromebook is the thing for you.
Yeah, I've listened to you, you know, rave about it, and I'm probably going to look into that concept because, you know, I'm not big into printing and all that stuff, and I know there's cloud-ready printers, and which I, you know, I do the basic stuff like most people.
Right.
Yeah, and the thing that is, I like Nick, I've got a Windows 7 machine.
Right.
Which, you know, I don't have on the internet. I use that for running some banking software and that type of stuff.
Right.
And everything else, I do off my Chromebook. So, like, this attack that they're talking about and getting into, they can come into my computer. They're not going to find much because it's a Chromebook.
Right.
There's, you know, only pictures, and everything is saved up to the cloud, and that's, again, more pictures and then some documents. Nothing that's national security or anything they have to worry about.
Right, and I can save a few bucks, too, now that they're going to charge.
Well, right, and Microsoft has said they will start charging a yearly fee to use Windows, and if you stop paying the yearly fee, you stop being able to use Windows.
Is that going to be per household, or is that going to be per computer?
We don't know yet.
Okay. Big secret.
Right. I don't think they've figured out how much greed they're going to...
I can't see them, you know, why would one person with one computer pay the same price as somebody with five computers?
Right. I don't
because
disagree
Windows,
with any of that.
Windows is currently licensed per computer.
Right.
You have all up until now paid for every single computer you put Windows on. I can see them saying $10 a month per computer.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. I know you got bigger fish to fry. Just second, please.
Yeah.
I had something else here. So at this time there's no workaround unless you pay for Windows support for the updates, correct?
Right.
Okay.
You just can't get them from any place, and so your choice is
limited.
Windows 10, Linux, or buying a Chromebook.
Right, and also I can't get back ones that I've missed. Like you said, I probably missed some of them.
Right.
Well, the back ones are still there. The problem is Microsoft changed the way the Windows Update Server works.
So what would I have?
So you have to download the newest Windows update to get the updates you already missed up until the point they stopped.
But like I said, you still aren't going to have all of them.
Okay.
There are just some that will not come to a Windows 7 machine anymore.
Okay. Will you be posting anything on your web?
Yep.
I really appreciate it.
All right. Yep. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Have fun.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
The other major change Microsoft did with Windows Update is they're not releasing the updates as individual files anymore. We used to talk about there's 22 updates. That used to be 22 separate files you had to download.
Right.
In fact, the problem now is if you install a brand new Windows 7 machine now, on your first boot, there's going to be 150 updates. On your next boot, there's going to be 75 updates. So Microsoft has changed it to what they're calling a roll-up update. So now it's one update file that has all of the patches in it. And the side effect of that is that your updates are now bigger.
Right.
And you can't opt out of a piece of the update.
Right. So the issue for people who pay metered internet is it's going to cost them a metric bucket load of money.
Yep.
To update Windows when they buy a new machine. And then it's going to cost them more every time they do it. So, I have friends who live in the middle of nowhere. And their only connection is through a cell phone modem.
Yep.
And they pay per gigabyte.
And if you have two devices, it has to download everything twice.
Exactly. And Microsoft doesn't care, right? They don't care. They don't care about the edge cases. They only care about the mainstream. And so if you're not in that mainstream, you've got an issue. So, it's going to be a problem. That's why so many people are buying things like Chromebooks. And so many people are, all of them update. Chromebooks update, Linux updates, Mac update, Windows updates. We get that. They all update. But, generally speaking, Chromebooks update the least. When Linux and Mac, it depends on the individual update. But for Windows, basically the way they do it is you get all the updates, and if your computer doesn't need that update, it throws it away.
Yep.
So if there's updates to five different video cards, you get all five updates, and it just picks the one it needs and then throws the rest away, which is certainly efficient for Microsoft. I can't deny that, but not so good for you as an individual user. So we're going to, I think, see a sea change in the way people use some of this stuff. I beg your pardon. we're going to start to see a sea change. More and more people are going to be taking a look at Chromebooks, and more people are going to be taking a look at Macs and Linux machines. In the first place, Macs are lovely machines. Linux machines are cheaper. Chromebooks are much cheaper, much cheaper. So I think we're going to see a definite sea change, and I think we're going to see Microsoft scrambling, really, we're already seeing that they're losing market share in schools, because so many schools are going with Chromebooks. They're buying Chromebooks for every student.
Yeah.
Because they're cheap enough to do that.
And they're very, very easy to manage.
Yeah. It used to be that a school would spend $1,000 per student on a normal laptop. And then tablets came on, and now you're looking at $500 per student. And now Chromebooks, you're looking at $200 per student or less. And so it really, really has cut the costs.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about them getting infected. And the maintenance on them, you're not paying for an OS.
Well, exactly. And the big thing is that if the students take even reasonable care with them, you get them back at the end of the year, you power wash them, and the next class gets them, and they're happy. And if you have to replace one or two, it's certainly better than, this one is what, 3 or 4 years old? My oldest one is 5 or 6 years old,
mm-hmm.
and it still has all of the latest versions. I just updated my oldest one this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it updates fine. Now it can't run it can't run Android apps.
Right.
And schools don't care.
No, they don't want that.
They're not interested in that. So what? So I think we're going to see, in general, beg your pardon, we're going to see a lot more schools picking them up and a lot more people picking them up when they see how much they can do versus how little they cost.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like you used to say back in the day when you first got into your Chromebook and that it's disposable. You know, I mean, losing a $1,500 or $1,200 laptop, you know, 17-inch screen and all this other stuff, versus a $200 to $300 Chromebook, no biggie.
Yep, and I don't mind taking a Chromebook on a trip if it gets broken, mm-hmm. If it gets stolen. I don't care.
Yeah.
I simply don't care. There's nothing on it.
And if it gets infected, which they don't, you know, if something goes wrong with it, it's so easy to erase it and start over because your files aren't actually stored on it. They're stored on Google Cloud.
Yeah.
Right. In point of fact, even the latest ones, and I actually talk about one here in a later news story, there's a USB drive you plug in and it infects people's machines.
I saw the video on that.
Yeah.
Because I followed that link that you put there.
Yep.
That is unbelievable.
Yep-er. And we'll talk about that in a later section.
Teaser.
Yeah, it's a little teaser. But again, when you reboot a Linux Chromebook, it has two copies of the operating system in it, one of which is read-only. If they don't match, it goes to the tiebreaker at Google.
Mm-hmm.
That's all built into ROM, and you can't change it. So these crackers that we'll talk about don't have an effect, have a permanent effect.
Mm-hmm.
You just reboot, and you're done.
Yep.
And so even if you get caught by one, it has no permanent effect on your machine.
Well, we had a caller just, I think, a couple weeks ago. They had a Chromebook, and he was running into issues in that and said, you know, well, the simplest thing is just reinitialize it.
Right.
You don't really lose anything because everything's there on the cloud. You just redo it.
Or your files are on external flash drives, and they don't get
We've talked about that. People, it's a different paradigm, mm-hmm. right? People say, well, it only has 16 gig of RAM. Yeah, but a 16 gig hard drive. Yeah, but you don't use the hard drive. It's only got 4 gig of RAM. Yeah, but that's all you need for the browser, which is all you have. Everything else is done in the cloud.
And it's so fast. I mean, you turn it on, boom, it's there.
Yep, yep.
There's no operating system to load up. It just opens up, there's the browser, and away you go.
And I've said this before, there's a feature called Power Wash, and that quite literally takes it right back to day one. There is nothing left on that machine that in any way is a leftover from the old machine. So any viruses that you actually would get are completely gone. And as I've said before, you log in with the same username and password you've been using.
Mm-hmm.
And in just a couple of minutes, depending on the speed of your internet connection and how much stuff you've got on the Chromebook, it all comes back.
Yeah.
It all comes back. All your icons are back across the bottom. All your apps are added in to the menus. Your browser comes back up. All the menu choices on that are the same. You just wait a minute or two, and it's done.
Now, here's the thing,
though. Or in my case, about 8 seconds. Sorry, go ahead.
Now, once we can run Android apps.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. You know, you download and you put down certain apps that you like, and you do a power wash or a reset. Question is it going to remember those apps?
Google has said yes.
And they're still in your purchase list anyway, so you should be able to re-download them.
Right.
But I took back a step on that, and are there Android apps that don't already have a Chrome equivalent? Why would you need to load an Android app? Doesn't it already...
Well, there are a few.
A few,
and I've said the same thing you've said.
Yeah.
There are some. I don't need them. I have the Chrome equivalent of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
The big thing, of course, is that they're now catering to developers. Developers, developers, developers.
Mm-hmm.
If developers only have to write one to one platform...
They're golden.
They're golden, and they will write more apps.
Heck,
I understand that's why they're doing it, and I get that.
Yep.
I completely get that. But for that, you're going to want a bigger hard drive. You're going to want more RAM. And it, really, you're going to want a touchscreen. So the price of Chromebooks is going to go up. But you get much more functionality for it. You know, even if you don't use a touchscreen for most things, the ability to do some stuff with a touchscreen is very, very nice. I have it doesn't matter. Listen, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Sound Bites and the Truly Great. And truly grateful for your member support, Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, you can give us a call at 585-966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And, of course, those phone numbers are always on our website at soundbites.org. Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And I said I would talk about poison taps, so I will.
This is cool.
Yeah, it really is, actually. A developer has created a $5 device that can hack into an unattended computer, even with a locked screen. The tool is called Poison Tap, and it can break into a password-protected computer if the user has left an internet browser running in the background. The attacker can then remotely use the victim's web accounts undetected. Sammy Kamkar, who has made a YouTube video showing what happens when it breaks into a computer, created the device on a Raspberry Pi microcomputer for $5. He demonstrated it working on a Macintosh computer, so you people aren't safe, but indicated it would work on other platforms. Poison Tap plugs into the target computer's USB port, and once there, it pretends to be the internet and hijacks traffic. Sammy Kamkar shows off his device. And the developer, he says that using the device requires no expertise and it can be used remotely after it is initially plugged into a computer. It is then able to steal the victim's cookies, the small files, of course, that store information about internet use. Some have specific functions. For example, session cookies allow users to be recognized within a website. If cookies are stolen, then the attacker may be able to access any websites that the user normally uses without the need for that person's username or password. It can pretend to be them. Rick Ferguson from security company Trend Micro said the device was a plausible threat. In normal circumstances, even when you are not using a web browser, it is still making requests and communicating due to updates or ads. Once the device is plugged in, it exploits that communication and steals session cookies from the top 1 million websites, said Mr. Ferguson. Mr. Ferguson explained even two-step verification, adding an extra layer of security to an account such as requiring a user to type in a code, which has been sent to their mobile phone. Does not provide extra protection because the device is able to intercept cookies. So if you have a Facebook or Twitter account, it can pretend it is already in an open session and bypass any password protection. He says web servers can prevent an attack only by using HTTPS, which is the Hypertext Transfer Protocol Secure. It's an encrypted connection. The most important thing they can do is use exclusively HTTPS. This would be a fantastic step forward for the web, he said. He advised all users could do to make sure. He advised that all users can do to make sure that they close their browser every time they leave their computer, even if it's locked. A Microsoft spokesrobot said, regardless of operating system, for this to work, physical access to a machine is required. So the best defense is to avoid leaving laptops and computers unattended. And to keep your software up to date. Apple did not comment.
Nice impression.
Thank you. So do you leave
when
your
did
computer
Nixon
unattended?
Work at, Microsoft? When did Nixon work at Microsoft?
I think forever. I think he's still there, actually.
Yeah. No, it's I don't think more Nixon, more that gentleman. That's the way it was.
Walter Cronkite.
Yes. Walter Cronkite.
Walter Cronkite. I love, thank you.
And that's, I can't get my voice down that far.
Yeah, but you,
and that's
it's the pretty way close. It was.
Thank
it's
you.
Pretty close.
Thank you. So do you leave your computer unattended? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
So we've said for a long time now, physical access to the computer really screws you. If a bad guy has physical access, they can do almost anything. One of the quickest things they can do is make their own user account. So that, you know, you're at a coffee shop, you get up to get a refill. They sit down at your computer, 30 seconds, they make a new user account, and they go back to their table, log into your computer. They don't need your password because they just made a new one, and you probably left your computer unlocked anyway.
Right.
And now, you know, they can at their leisure log in and look at all your all the stuff. So we used to think by locking your computer and getting up and walking away, you were pretty safe. But now, you know, that's showing to be not true. There's been a longstanding social hack. In fact, that's how Stuxnet virus got propagated. Dropping random USBs in a parking lot, USB keys. Someone will plug it in to see what's on it, to see if they can return it to the owner, because we're, you know, friendly, you know, nice people. And there's malicious software on that key. And our computers automatically look at USB drives and say, hey, what are you? Because it's trying to make it easy for users. So it's all this, everything, and every time the good guys try to make something easier, the bad guys figure out a way to make it worse.
Right. Right. So it's a little, the Raspberry Pi is this great device that lets you do all kinds of cool things.
I love it. I set mine up, and it only took to set it up, actually, maybe a half hour. But then I got into, there's a lot more that you could do, and I'd love to learn more on some of the skins that you can put onto it. And you'd have to get into Raspberry Pi and Kodi to know what, you know, what I'm talking about. But
right,
it's amazing and what it can do.
Yep. Yep.
Like you say, it's cheap. It's a cheap
it's
little
a few dump. Bucks, and then and you're done. Yeah. And this thing, you can basically just plug it in and bang your own. Done. It's kind of that fast.
So they could put it in like a public spot where you're used to plugging into a printer, you plug in for power.
Mm-hmm.
So
right, it doesn't have to plug directly into your computer.
No.
You can hide it under a desk with a long cord on it.
Yep.
You plug that in and bang, your own.
Yeah. So someone plugs it in themselves because they think they're hooking up to the local network or the local printer to do whatever they need to.
Right.
Yeah.
And now with the new machines that also provide power.
Yep.
Through the same port, you must plug in.
That's actually been a...
Yeah, the Raspberry Pi has on it, just so folks know, you can use USB, or it has the internet cable capability. So, yes, they could hook that up, put it underneath the desk, and feed up the cable that you think you're getting to the internet, plug that in, and then your own. Like you said,
it does.
Own.
It does direct wired Ethernet as well as Wi-Fi. So they can pretty much do whatever they need to do, and you just plug it in and bang your own. It's done.
There's been an issue that's been called juice jacking. You're at a public place, and you plug your phone in to charge it. You know, a lot of companies now have a public charging station for you. Well, a bad guy can put a malicious computer, you know, behind the wall or behind a sign, and so you plug your phone in thinking it's just charging, and you've actually joined your phone to his computer. He sucks all the data off of it.
Yep.
So on Apple, on the iPhones, when you plug your device into a computer for the first time, a message pops up on your device saying, do you want to trust this computer?
Right.
Does Android do something like that?
Something like that.
No warning comes
but people just hit okay all the time anyway.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
So you think
right,
you're,
so it's, yeah.
They
so
don't I've actually take seen, the time there are, to there read are, the yep. screens.
There are companies that make a charging-only USB cable by removing the data pins.
Right.
And it only has the power pins.
Okay.
So, you know, you might want to invest in one of those so you can charge your device. But then you got to remember when you're trying to transfer data to your computer to use the right cable.
Well, that's
when you want to transfer.
But that's
why they make tape. You can put a piece of tape on it and write on that
colored
tape.
Colored tape. Or
power
just get,
only.
Or you could just get
maybe
they
find
have different
one with a switch.
Electrical tape in different colors.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yep.
And just put that on for red so you know charging.
Yep.
Simple enough to do, or just get some red. If your wife has red nail polish, borrow that and put it on the end of it.
Right. Or you could have it, no judging.
Yeah.
No
judgment. So this power tap thing is an issue, and it's getting more and more prevalent that these sneaky little things are happening all over in terms of being able to break into your computer and do whatever it is they want to do to your machine.
Well, it's just like they showed, well, it's got to be at least 3-4 months ago that we talked about. It's a handheld device, and it looks like a tablet. And somebody could be going by you with this in their hand, and if you don't have your credit cards in that secured, you know, shielding that they give you, they can sit there and be right next to you. They don't even have to, they don't have to, be right there. They could be behind you in line and suck all your information off, and they've got all your credit card information.
Somebody probably makes an entire wallet that's a Faraday cage.
They do. Silent, they do make them.
Silent pocket is
they do make them. They're not cheap, and I don't like the look of any of them. So far, there's the metal one. They also make they're not leather, but you know, a regular supple, regular looking wallet with a mesh in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like the looks. So I'm not that it matters. It's in my pocket. 99. I get that.
Yeah, but it's still.
It doesn't have enough pockets. Is my problem. Yeah. I got so much junk I have in those little pockets.
Mm-hmm.
I need one with a lot of pockets.
Well, luckily, I know you got yours already, Steve, the one with the chip in it, because CMB.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm still waiting on mine. I haven't gotten it yet, and then the longer it takes, doesn't bother me, because more and more places are complaining that the chip's a pain in the butt.
It takes longer to do a chip transaction.
Yeah. But it's more secure, theoretically.
And it's different liability as a merchant.
Right.
So it used to be that if a merchant accepted a stolen credit card without realizing it, they didn't get penalized. In fact, what was it? October 2015. That's when everyone should have gotten their new chip. The credit card companies have shifted liability. So if a merchant accepts a fraudulent credit card, the merchant loses the money. If they use a chip, they don't have that liability.
Right. Okay.
So if the card has a chip and you don't use it, then the merchant gets liable. So I find it odd that a lot of the big stores that have the chip reader in place are still saying swipe it anyway. And that's probably because swiping is faster.
Mm-hmm.
Swiping is much faster.
Much faster.
You've got a line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you add 5 seconds to every transaction. You got 10 people in line.
And it's more like 30 seconds.
And it's much more like 30 seconds.
And I've seen some stores that have like a little card in the chip reader.
Don't do this.
Not in use.
Yep.
So you got to swipe.
Yep.
And it's sort of backwards, too. You're used to swiping pretty fast with the chip card. You put it in and leave it in.
Right.
You can't take it out again.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's where the Android Pay and that is.
Oh, yeah.
Along like the...
Canandaigua doesn't do Apple Pay yet.
So no, but I'll tell you what...
I can't put it in mine.
What fascinated me was, where did I go the last week? Oh, on the way home, I stopped at Five Guys and picked up lunch for me and my bride.
Does your wife know?
Yeah. Oh! Bum-bum, thank you. He'll be here all week. Try the veal. Luckily, she's not listening.
Yeah.
She didn't get home till 4, so I don't care. Anyway, here's the thing.
Did she have lunch left by the time she got home?
I have cats. Look, if she's late, she's late.
Yeah.
And I say that about everything. Anyway, here's the deal. I walked in the door and I ordered and I paid and I sat down and took out my phone to look at the news. And there was a little notice that said, you're at Five Guys. You can use Apple Pay here. Android Pay here. So next time I go, I'm going to try Android Pay.
Yeah, I just get ready to set that up for me because
set it up. I've just only ever used it one place, but now it's informing me. Apparently, I don't look at my phone most places I go, but it's informing me that this place is Android Pay acceptable.
I just got another update to my Google Pixel phone, and it's adding all these other features in that. And it's just unbelievable what it's doing. Because, like, I also use this other program I love is called Waze.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it can work off my calendar. You know, it syncs to my calendar. Well, you got to go to, if you put the address in that in, it comes up and says, all right, you got to leave. And you just go ahead and start it, and it just maps you right out.
Yep.
Okay. Yep.
Google Maps actually does that too.
Yeah. Well,
Waze owns Google.
Apple Maps
Google.
Does it too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think Waze was the first one to do.
Waze was the first one,
and it accepts social traffic reports.
Yeah, and that's so where
that's the big thing.
Yeah, that's what I like.
There's an accident here.
Says,
you better go around.
And let
it.
Me know when I was headed out to my friend's house. Oh, watch it. There's a caution up ahead. Right. Sure enough, they were doing road work, so you had to get on over.
What they're talking about doing, and I think they're doing it in some places, is, you know, they know where you are with your phone. I mean, you're being tracked all the time. And they're talking about just using those data. So if there's a slow up, it shows up. There's people are stopped or slowed up or whatever it is.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a longer break. We take a slightly longer break. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You've spent an entire hour listening to this show, but you get another chance to do it again because we got a whole nother hour coming up. So stay tuned. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. And we'll see you on the other side with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. You're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. And here's a story that's bound to make Dave angry.
The one you're talking about.
The mere presence of gigabit internet speeds in a metro area drives down the price of plans at lower speeds, according to a new industry-funded research. Thus, the data suggests that even customers who don't purchase gigabit internet benefit from its availability. So there. The research also found, to no one's surprise, that having more ISPs in a particular region drives prices down, and that the presence of fast speeds encourages other ISPs to offer higher speed plans to match their competitors. The study, titled "Broadband Competition Helps to Drive Lower Prices and Faster Download Speeds for U.S. Residential Consumers," analyzed, it's a study. It doesn't have to have a catchy title like "From Here to Eternity," right? It's just a study. The study analyzed DSL cable and fiber broadband plans. Fiber broadband. From the 100 largest
green light?
From the 100 largest designated market areas in the U.S. It was written by Analysis Group, which is an economics consulting firm, with research funding from the Fiber to the Home Council. I love that there's a Fiber to the Home Council, an industry consortium founded by fiber network equipment manufacturers. I don't think they actually run cable themselves, fiber themselves. The presence of gigabit service in a market is associated with a $27 decrease in the average monthly price of broadband plans with speeds of 100 megabits or greater, but less than a gigabit. That's a 25% price reduction. Markets with gigabit internet also see smaller price decreases for plans as slow as 25 megabits. The presence of gigabit internet has no significant effect on prices of plans with speeds below 25 megabits per second. This isn't as surprising since the slowest plans are already the cheapest and aren't suitable substitutes for gigabit speeds. Gigabit prices decline when at least two providers offer gigabit service. If a designated market area moves from having one to two providers of gigabit internet, we estimate that the standard monthly price for gigabit internet will decline by approximately $57 to $62, which is equal to a reduction in price of between 34 and 37%, the study said. Going from one to three gigabit competitors would reduce prices by an estimated $98 to $106 per month. Competition at any speed reduces prices. An increase of one competitor is associated with approximately $1.50 decline in the monthly standard broadband price for internet plans, with speeds ranging from 50 megabits to less than a gigabit, the study said. For plans with download speeds of less than 25 megabits, the decrease in average monthly prices was 42 cents for each competitor. Availability of fast speeds increases the likelihood that other ISPs will introduce their own high-speed plans to match competitors. In particular, we find that each additional competitor offers broadband in a higher speed category that will increase the probability that other broadband providers in the market will offer broadband at those higher speeds by 4 to 17% on an annual basis, the study said. One limitation in this study relates to the size of the markets analyzed. The average market studied had a population of 1.45 million people and 7.38 internet providers, which is certainly not the case here in Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there isn't much overlap among wired ISPs, as cable companies in particular avoid each other's territory, which is a polite way of saying they're a monopoly. There might be seven providers across a sizable area, but any individual neighborhood is unlikely to have much, if any, broadband choice. And we hear that here, as a matter of fact. We talk to people, you know, particularly in the southern tier, who don't actually have a choice.
Yeah.
The choice is no internet or the one provider.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get that. So, how do you feel about your broadband choices? We know how Dave feels. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Dave is just, he's actually already taken the breath to speak, and I'm not letting him, and it's frustrating the heck out of him. Go, no, Dave, go.
No, I was just going to say, I got a tab now on my, when I open up my browser,
yep,
that checks the status. Every Friday, I check to see how far green light has come.
Yep. They're not in your neighborhood yet.
No.
I know. I got to call Mark. I know. But it's... It is. It's an interesting thing to find that this is happening. Fiber is big now. Very, very big. But also, mesh wireless is getting to be big. Because it's much less expensive to put up mesh wireless in an area than it is to put up fiber or to run any kind of physical wires from place to place. So who knows what's going to happen with all of that stuff as time goes on, but we'll see. In the meantime, we're going to talk to Steve from Greece, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Well, first of all, I want high-speed internet for free.
Of course you do. You're a reasonable human being.
I understand. If they can't give it, I'm not happy.
There you go.
I have a Chromebook question for you.
Yes.
I am going to take a trip. I've got a huge selection of CDs. I ripped a bunch of them with Handbrake to put on a hard drive and take with me. And I tried them, and they play, but there's no sound.
Then they don't play. If you're talking about CDs, they're only music. So if you don't get sound, they're not actually playing.
That's DVDs. I apologize.
Oh, DVDs. Okay. So here's the deal. What are you using to play them?
Whatever the default is on Chrome.
Yeah, no. Here's what you need to do. There is a program called VLC.
Okay, I do have VLC.
And if you use that, they should play fine.
It's probably what's called a codec issue.
Right.
You compress the audio with one format in Handbrake, and Chrome doesn't have that format to decompress it.
Right, but well,
MP3. Well, did you use MP3?
No, I'm sorry. It was DVDs. It
oh,
was...
DVD. Okay. Yeah. So did you use MP4?
No. Right.
I have MP4.
Yeah.
And M4.
Yep. Try download VLC. You can get it right from the store. The Chrome, what do they call it? The web store. And just search for VLC from Video LAN Corporation is what that stands for. Or Video LAN or whatever it is. But VLC has a complete media player. They also have just a YouTube player and a video caster for your Chromecast. But those are not what you're looking for. You want plain VLC.
Right.
Install that in your system, and then associate it. It should do it automatically. If not, go into it and tell it to associate itself with the video formats, and then it should play that. I do the same thing. I have a number of DVDs that I have legal right to do this with, and I have ripped them and I play them on my Chromebook. I keep them on thumb drives, of course.
Right.
But I play them on my Chromebook all the time.
A lot of times when you buy the DVD, special packs that have, the extra discs or things like that, many of them will come with an electronic version, either an iTunes download or an Amazon download, Google download, one of the download services. And then you download a pre-ripped copy, basically.
Right.
I can't afford those special things.
Yeah.
Can I ask another quick Chromebook question?
Yeah.
I am used to working with a tree for my files.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to figure out a way to... I have two external drives, how I can transfer files from one external drive to the other, because I can't get a tree.
Okay. There is an app. There is a file... an app called Files.
Yeah, I got that. Yep.
And down the left-hand side is a tree representation of all of your stuff.
But it's a tree representation. Like if I click on the drive, that's the only drive I can see. I can't see the other drive.
Well, you have... Okay, I'm looking at mine now. I've got one for downloads, which is on the internal drive. I've got another tree format for Dropbox.
Right.
And I don't click on the thing itself. There's a little arrow next to it, and I click on the little arrow, and it drops down, and I see all the folders.
And if you plug a flash drive in, that shows up.
If you click on a folder, can you now take the contents of that folder and drag it to a different drive?
Yes, you're just like you would in any tree format, you would be actually dragging it to another folder on the tree, right? On the other tree.
I don't have that, I can't get that view. I'm used to the Windows tree where I can see all the drives and I can open the folders and leave the folder open I want and then drag the slider bar up to see the other drives. You know what I'm talking about? Or am I?
I do, and that is exactly what I'm looking at under Files.
Okay, well, then I'm going to have to do some more trying with Files.
Yep.
You may not be noticing the little tiny, what is that, a greater than sign?
Yeah, a little greater than sign, and then it becomes a V when you it points down.
And that's what opens, and just we sometimes call that the disclosure icon, because it discloses the
maybe
contents.
You do. I call it the little arrow.
The little arrow thingy, yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking at one for my downloads, and I have a folder in there called Android and a folder in there called Data.
Does it make a difference? Because I saw all of those, but I couldn't see two external drives.
I just plugged in my USB drive, and I see it, and I see the folders in it.
At the top or the bottom, or alphabetical.
It came up in front of Dropbox. It randomly came up in the middle.
But it's still not two external drives.
Well, it's an external USB drive.
If you plug another one in.
Yeah, if you plug in another one, it'll become another drive.
I don't have one.
Yeah, it should be in just another drive. I've done that before.
Okay.
I have moved data from one USB to another USB. and hold on.
Dave just pulled a USB drive out of his pocket.
And
don't leave home without one.
I have a bag. I have a bag of USB drives in the car.
I apologize, guys. I've wasted your time. I will look at it again. I thought it was frustrating. I couldn't do what I was so easy to do. And
how do you open this program, Nick?
It's called Files, and it's one of the.
Yeah, I've got it installed. Yeah. I've got that in there.
Yeah, you can't not have it installed, frankly.
Yeah, it's there.
But yeah, it's the stuff on the left hand side. Each folder, each device has next to it a little greater than symbol.
Right.
That
okay,
is actually the pull down arrow.
Basically, I couldn't get it to. I couldn't see both thumb drives. One was a Samsung half gig, half tera.
Right.
The other is a 64 gig. SD card.
Right. You do have to scroll up and down, and the scroll bar disappears if you don't have the cursor on it.
So okay, that might have been it.
Maybe
that's part of the issue right there. So you see the scroll bar is there.
Apple does that too. They hide it. Well, you're on a laptop screen. We should save those 4 pixels. No, I always turn that on, always on.
Yeah,
always
show
the scroll bar.
Right. So that may be your issue. If you're not actually pointed there, you don't see the scroll bar.
Okay, so that could be it. I didn't see a scroll bar.
Right.
Did I hear you right, Steve? There's an always on?
No, that's on a Mac.
On the Mac, okay. You can always show the scroll bar.
Okay.
There's probably something in the billions of settings in Chrome.
Right.
Okay, that was probably it. And the problem was I didn't see a scroll bar, so that's why I couldn't do it. And I just have to hover over where a scroll bar is supposed to be.
Yep.
All right, that probably is my whole issue. I appreciate it, gentlemen. You have a good day.
You too. Have fun.
I always have fun.
There you go.
With my free high-speed internet.
Yeah. With your free high-speed internet.
Because your neighbor's because your neighbor has an open Wi-Fi.
Right. On green light.
On green light,
yeah. Right. All right, thanks, Steve.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Now, that's an interesting question. Have you read your green light terms of service? Does it allow you to resell?
I don't resell, so that's a very good question.
So you could charge your neighbors, what, $20 a month, $30 a month for your Wi-Fi password?
That's very, and particularly because you can have a guest.
Yeah.
A lot of them, you can have a guest.
Yeah, have a guest network so they can't get into your stuff.
So they can't get to your stuff and do it that way. We're not advocating that, by the way.
Read your terms of service. It's probably illegal.
Steve Rave's opinions are not those of this show, this station, or any right-thinking human being.
All right, I'll be over in your driveway in a little while.
You're welcome anytime, and you know that.
Oh, yes.
All right, back to the phone. Hold on, let me close some of this stuff up. I do want to point out, however, that my Chromebook goes to my Dropbox perfectly. I can see all my Dropbox stuff, and I can move stuff back and forth easily there. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Hi, Walter. What's up?
Hello there, guys. I have two Ubuntu booting questions that maybe Nick can help me with.
Maybe.
Okay. First one. I had a laptop, pretty late model, that I loaded Ubuntu on it, 16.04 the long term, plus put on the Zubuntu desktop. In order to make it secure, I chose during the installation to encrypt the hard drive.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So now, when I boot up, and I've had some updates.
Yeah?
Whoops.
Yeah, we got to take a break. I'm sorry. Hold on the line, will you please? Sadly, we don't get to not take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Walter from Greece, and you, 21 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And
I had Walter Cronkite was supposed to say, and that's the way it is, but it didn't play.
And it,
because it...
at 25 minutes after the hour, we have Walter from Greece on the line, who's using Zubuntu Desktop and has encrypted his hard drive.
Right. And what has happened is that I know that there are updates with new kernels, but the trouble is I do not see the grub splash screen. Now, I know that I've used in the past a boot repair disk that's Linux-based, and I've been successful because I've had that trouble before. Because I have encrypted this hard drive, do you think I can safely use that boot repair disk and bring up the grub again, that this is really a grub repair issue?
No, you really can't. That's a very good question. Once you've unlocked the drive,
okay,
if you're using that, okay, if this is one of those bootable CD things,
yes, it is. It's a bootable
then
CD.
No.
Yes.
Then no.
No.
It will see the drive as an
encrypted
random noise.
Right.
Unless the drive encrypted bootloader says, please enter your password. The
right.
Mac will do that. I can boot external right. drives, and it says, please enter the password for this
right.
disk.
But this is a bootable device,
yeah.
and it may not know it. So, no. But, how to do this is way past what we can do over the air here.
Okay, well, yeah,
but,
we'll forget about that,
well,
and
but,
I can live with it.
Hold on. Let me give you some hints.
Okay.
There is a grub configuration file.
Correct. I've got that.
Where you can tell it how many seconds to show the grub menu before you start the top item on the menu.
Oh, okay.
And you've probably set that to zero.
Okay.
I had that issue. It was set to 30, and I was having all kinds of issues with my new machine until I figured out what I was doing wrong. And so I had set it to like 1, and that was way too short. To pick a knot, you know, to get my fingers on the keys. So I've set it to like 10. But the idea is if you set it to 0, you don't see the grub menu at all.
Okay.
Which is the idea. So that's what's happened. And then once you do the grub menu, there's a command you have to give it to essentially load the grub menu into the actual boot process. But you can read about all that online, and it will tell you, you know, if you want to, how do I change the grub menu is essentially what you're looking for.
Okay, great. All right. All right, now I have the other grub, basically a booting question. From what I've read on the, we have, again, Ubuntu 16.04 loaded on a relatively older machine, and it runs pretty quite well, except the problem is once you hit grub, the screen was black.
Uh-huh.
But then I've read the other things that people say, well, there's an issue about the video driver not being compatible with the 4.4.0 series of kernels. I was able to go ahead and make a change that I put in the code, a command of no such, well, I can't remember, it is non-such whatever, and I get now a purple screen. But eventually then the Ubuntu splash screen comes up and then proceeds onward. My worry is that normally in the Ubuntu's of the past, after 30 starts, it likes to go ahead and check the integrity of the hard drive.
Right.
And so I'm kind of like, well, I'll be sitting there for about a minute or so or whatever it does as it does its thing. Well, right now, with this purple or black screen, I have no idea if the machine is stuck or whatever.
Yep. Hold on. Because I had exactly the same issue.
Okay.
So let me ask you this. Does it eventually come back and work?
The machine will work, yes. It will proceed. I'll get the flash of the Ubuntu, and then it will proceed to continue on to the login screens.
Okay, so you can then, once you're past this black screen issue, you can then see the screen okay?
Yes.
All right. What happened with me, and it may be the same with you, what happened with you is I had a machine that was both HDMI and DVI and VGA and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And, of course, every computer, when it first boots up, is in VGA mode.
Yes.
And the screen, whether it was the computer not telling the screen or the screen not catching what the computer was telling it, it wasn't switching to HDMI mode until the graphical user interface actually loaded.
Okay.
So what I learned to do, and now I have memorized the sequence on my monitor. If I really want to see what's going on in that blank space, I just need to change my input.
Okay.
From HDMI to, in my case, DVI.
Okay.
But it will then, in my case, again, your mileage may vary. In my case, it then automatically changed back to HDMI once the graphical user interface booted.
Okay.
Or plug a monitor into every video port.
Right, and figure out which one is doing what.
Right, and that's going to be my problem, because right now when we have it set up that it's got the serial port, whatever it is, analog plug-in. I don't recall this computer having an HDMI port. So,
well, but it this principle is the same. Whatever port you're plugged into is not the native port for that monitor.
Okay.
And so until the video driver says specifically to the monitor, this is what I need.
Okay.
It's not going to change.
And sometimes, was this a desktop or a laptop?
It's a desktop.
Sometimes what I've had to do is I unplug the monitor.
Yes.
Plug it back in, and the computer says, oh, you want to use that port.
Oh.
And it lights up.
Yep. The other thing you might try is there is a file called XRANDR. XRANDR.
Okay.
It's actually XR&R. And what that does, it's the R&R Windows, X Windows system. It sets the size, the orientation, reflection, which outputs you're using, all that stuff for your monitor. And what I would suggest you do is read up about XRANDR and really understand what it does. And then you can put that in the startup section of your Linux system and tell it to do its thing immediately. And that's kind of like, that's essentially what the graphical interface does anyway. Okay?
Yeah.
It essentially sends an XRANDR command that says, oh, we're using, in my case, the HDMI port.
Got it.
So what you can do, and in fact, and now that I say that, that's essentially what I did, but I'd forgotten I'd done it because it was a while ago. I set up XRANDR at boot up to issue that command. So pop, it goes into HDMI, and now I see everything that's happening.
Ah, okay. Marvelous. Well, it looks like I have some reading to do.
Yes, you do.
To tackle these. So I appreciate all the information. Thank you. Thank you, Nick.
It's my pleasure.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. I love Ubuntu. I love Linux. But it is, and you can do anything with it. But the problem is,
you can do anything with it.
You can do anything with it, and sometimes you have to.
It always reminds me of the olden days when computers first came out. You had to tinker with them. You know, you had to write your own programs. You got a blinking cursor on a line, and that was it.
Yep. Yep.
And it was fun. It was, and then I almost bad when computers became, you know, general purpose tools and everyone can use
them.
That's
right. Now you young puppies, we used to have to compute uphill both ways in the snow. All right. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Victor?
Hi guys. I was just paying my Time Warner cable bill a little while ago and it said, get a Time Warner cable mobile hotspot. Now, exactly what is a mobile hotspot?
It's a cell phone that doesn't make phone calls.
Yes. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, so it's a cell phone that has Wi-Fi in it. So it'll suck in a cellular data signal, create a Wi-Fi signal, and then your laptop or tablet can get on the internet. Most smartphones already have a hotspot feature built into it. So you can turn on the hotspot, and your phone has cellular and Wi-Fi and does that for you. Some carriers charge extra for hotspot features, and some don't. So you have to check on your carrier first.
Is it secure?
Generally, yes. The Wi-Fi is usually encrypted between your phone and the hotspot. And then the cellular data itself is generally secure, but having it encrypted at your end is always good too. Now, Time Warner has a couple of different mobile hotspot issues, services. One is that Time Warner has Wi-Fi signals all over town. And if you happen to be somewhere that there is a Time Warner wireless network, I've also seen them called cable Wi-Fi, you can log into it with your standard Time Warner account information. And then typically a mobile hotspot would be, you know, just a little, you know, cell phone sized device you carry with you. And many of them can support several devices. So, you know, you, a spouse, children, you know, can have three or four different devices hooked to it at once.
So, but you're saying that most of the cell phones already have that capability built in then?
The smartphones have them built in. Yeah.
Okay, now, the data you're using, is that data that is on your data plan from your phone, or is it just part of your Time Warner cable internet account?
If you get the Time Warner mobile hotspot, then it would... It would be billed to your Time Warner account.
Okay, so there's no data charge on that.
Well, there might be.
I believe there is.
Yeah, there probably is. We're trying to look up those devices now. Okay. On your cell phone hotspot, it depends on the carrier. Some need a separate data plan for hotspot data. Other carriers include the data you use on the hotspot as part of your regular data usage on the phone.
Okay, can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
Okay, my mother-in-law's home in Worcester, Massachusetts. Right now they have Spectrum, which is our Time Warner right now.
Right.
And she wants to get rid of it because she doesn't even use a computer. When we come and visit her, we bring our laptops and stuff, and we use our... But she's going to get rid of it. Now, with the Time Warner hotspot, could I use it to get into the Charter?
Probably. Charter purchased Time Warner, and they're rebranding Charter, Time Warner, and Bright House as Spectrum.
Right.
We're not sure how far along that merger is. We're not sure if the services from one company will have transferred to the other company yet. Hopefully, that will become made clear pretty soon. At the Apple Cider Apple Cider Users Group, we have invited Phil Dampier to come and speak at our February meeting on the state of the internet and the Spectrum acquisition and cord cutting and things like that. And Jerry Seward is going to be speaking at our December meeting next month on how the internet has changed in the last 10 years. We were joking about that earlier, one of the TV shows. Remember the Dancing Baby? Well, that Dancing Baby is old enough to have its own baby now.
Yeah, really.
So we're not quite sure how those companies have merged together yet. But it's very likely that a mobile hotspot with its own cellular service will work anywhere the cellular connections
if they universalize the logins, sure.
Yeah.
So my suggestion would be, particularly if you're going there for Thanksgiving, take the hotspot with you and try it.
Or call.
Give her a chat because she's going to get rid of it all. She's going to get rid of the internet because she doesn't use it.
Yep.
And we like to, you know, stay in touch and everything when we go over there. But I'm going to give it a shot and see what happens.
Yeah, yep. Let us know.
I will.
All right, thanks.
We
got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Sound bites. Member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 43 minutes after the hour, we're sound bites.
Has it dropped almost 10 degrees since we started the show?
Yeah, it's dropping
fast. I'm glad I did bring my coat in. It was warm, and I'll forget my coat.
I didn't. Yeah, mine's out in the car. It's gorgeous.
I need the pockets more than the warmth.
Yeah, right. Tain't a fit night out for man or
beast.
Well,
they're saying by morning we're supposed to have sleet and snow.
Yeah, don't use the S word. Do not use the S word.
It's a four-letter word.
I saw they actually used, I got to look it up, but they used snow, and it was an acronym for something.
Yeah.
And it was very cute.
You have to look it up. All right.
Yeah, I got to look it up.
You can give us a call, by the way, 966-5299, 800-790-0415, and I'll read another news story. Many an iPhone 6 Plus has been struck down by the scourge known as touch disease, but Apple has not acknowledged the problem was systematic or widespread until now. in what we have to imagine is as close to a mea culpa as Apple is likely to offer. iPhone 6 Plus devices exhibiting flickering displays and touchscreen issues are eligible for a reduced price repair. Apple is careful to note that this problem mainly appears after being dropped multiple times on a hard surface and then incurring further stress. Though the website iFixit suggests that the problem could also be due to the phone's infamous tendency to bend. Either way, some force must be exerted to the phone, resulting reliably in a critical touchscreen component being damaged or unseated, and that makes it, like it or not, at least partially a user-caused issue. Apple declined to call it a design flaw or a manufacturing defect, and that seems to be a point of pride on their part. iPhones with touch disease will be repaired for $149. And if you previously had it repaired or replaced for a similar symptom, which might have cost you upwards of $300, Apple will reimburse you the difference, assuming you got it fixed at a legitimate Apple dealer. iFixit pointed out in an email that this price is about what third-party repairers have charged in the past anyway, and considering refurbished phones are subject to the same problem, the 90-day warranty is rather short. Notably, the program is only for the iPhone 6 Plus, and although a similar problem has been seen on the 6, we can probably trust Apple's numbers and say that this is primarily an issue with the Plus. It certainly took long enough. It's been more than 2 years since the 6 Plus was announced. That's right, 2 years. And Apple never addressed the touch disease issue, despite it being quite common, and despite quietly reinforcing the next generation of iPhones to prevent the problem, the one they didn't publicly acknowledge, from occurring again. In fact, it was long enough that a lawsuit was filed alleging that Apple knew about the problem and failed to provide adequate support to affected users. Better late than never, though, and covering previous repairs is generous by Apple standards. Drop by an Apple store or an authorized dealer, or talk to tech support to get your afflicted iPhone 6 Plus back in action. So does your iPhone 6 Plus have touch disease? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And it may be that people that have bought the 6 Plus is used now, because it's 2 years old and everyone who bought them new is replaced them by now.
Right.
That you may not know it had this issue to begin with. So it's interesting that they're going also back and reimbursing you if you had it done previously. One of the things that we have seen with Apple is they have two out of warranty repair prices. They have a battery price, which is like $100, and then they have anything else, which is in the $300 range, depending on the size of the screen. And so people that have, you know, like a headphone jack that doesn't work, well, that's the everything else.
And it's based on the screen size.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that makes a lot of sense to me right there.
Yeah, it can be frustrating.
How does that equate?
Well, flat rate repair. Still,
yeah,
a lot
but
of companies,
no, the headphone jack is the same size whether it's on a large screen or a small screen.
Except in the iPhone 7.
Which there isn't one thereof.
Right.
Yeah. So that's how they stopped that problem, is they just removed the headphone jack.
My headphone jack doesn't work. That's right. It's missing entirely.
Yes. Hmm. Unit not equipped with headphone jack. Service repair closed.
Right.
Device operating as expected. No trouble found. Device operating as expected.
Device operating suspected.
Headphone doesn't work. Yes, that's correct.
That's correct. That's right.
That's standard.
That's right. So, yeah. So Apple is semi kind of almost acknowledging that this is an issue, and they're going about fixing it, which is good. Because they do not label it a design flaw or a manufacturing error, they are not liable for that repair. They're offering you a discount out of the generosity of their hearts, not because they're acknowledging that they screwed up.
Okay, they also have, I forgot about that, they have a third tier, battery, screen, and everything else. Because the screen is usually the thing you break when you drop it too many times.
Right.
We had a guy come in this week. He's dropped it five or six times, and the last time it finally broke.
Yeah.
Well, please stop dropping it.
Man, I have had that problem with my phone.
It just jumps out of your hand, doesn't it?
I had about 2 weeks where I could not hold that phone in either hand with a gun to my head. It just kept dropping everywhere. I put it down on the table, it would spontaneously leap onto the floor. I would put it on the bed, it would spontaneously leap onto the floor. I would hold it in my hand, and it would suicide. Thank God.
Kamikaze.
Yeah. Thank God the screen never broke. What would happen every single time is the back would pop off and the battery would come out. And I think that took the shock.
Yeah. Okay. That's why there's crumple zones in cars, something to absorb the impact.
Right. So going back to the 7, though, so what does it do? Wirelessly? If you want to use, say, a headset, you got to use wireless.
Bluetooth headset, or you use a lightning-based headphones, or it comes with a lightning to 3.5 millimeter headphone jack.
The problem is that lightning port is the only port on it, and that's where you charge it. So you cannot charge it and listen with headphones at the same time unless they are wireless headphones.
But it has an all-day battery, so you just charge it at night. Or there's a Belkin adapter it's lightning and then it has a lightning pass through for power and a headphone jack too.
Because I got a wireless earbud for my phone.
Yep.
Even though it's got the port on it, it's easier to just put the butt in, and then you're not messing around with a wire.
And there are a few Android phones that don't have a headphone jack either.
But there's a choice. The Galaxy, the Pixel has the headset.
Right. The real issue is for the people who use things like Squares and PayPal's.
They're all going to have to move the Lightning connector, which is generally more expensive hardware that you have to put into the box. It's really, really amazing how the Square credit card reader worked by converting your magnetic stripe into sound and using the microphone port. That inside the headphone jack there's a microphone tap.
Yeah.
And so it can read the sounds.
Brilliant technology.
Yeah.
And that's why basically they're free. You buy them for $10 at the store, but then they give you a $10 credit. So they give you a free credit card reader because they know they're going to make it up with their 3%. I wish Intuit would think about that. They don't.
Yeah, right.
Well, and actually, we are seeing now that the chip-enabled readers from Intuit and Square and PayPal generally cost about $50.
Yep.
Because there is a computer in this thing to read the chip.
Right.
And
right.
Annoyingly, it's $50 to buy the reader.
Right. Those are much more expensive.
Yeah.
But, we're seeing people using them all over the place. They've become the pretty much de rigueur at the market. So everybody has them there. And a bunch of people who didn't take credit cards because it was such a pain in the patoot.
To get a phone line in.
To get either get a phone line in or to swipe.
Like a chunker,
and then are they going to take it when you send it in and et cetera, et cetera.
We have to blow the dust off Archer Chunker when someone has to use it.
and now it's just a matter of, here's the Square, swipe the card, we're done. Thanks very much. Now it's just your data. Well, that costs you too, but it's very easy. It's very convenient.
Not slow like on the others that you'd hear, out there on the market, had to dial to make the connection. Yep. They'd sit there and wait. And wait. Yep.
That used to be the longest process. So you swipe your card, it was really fast, but then it's got to dial the phone and do all this and do all that and then make the connection.
Right. Now it's pretty quick.
Most of the card readers now will use internet services, which is a lot faster.
Right.
Yep.
And if they ever manage to get Wi-Fi at the market, people won't even have to use their data to do that stuff.
Yeah. That was always annoying about the old credit card readers we had in our shop is that a business pays for outgoing telephone calls.
Right.
And so at the end of the month, we'd get our phone bill and there'd be hundreds of, 1 minute calls.
Right.
And it's 8 cents a minute.
Right.
And so you have to add that into your cost of doing business.
Yeah.
It was a pain. So when we got a chance to get a new credit, the new credit card reader that reads the chips also does internet. And so, yes! And then, but that took a week to get that configured by our bank to accept internet instead of phone line. There's always something.
It's always something. Roseanne Dana. It's always something.
Move the bottleneck from one place to another.
That's right. They are kind of revolutionizing things, and we were talking
down
about
to 20, the Square one's down to $29 with the chip reader.
Yeah, and The Android Pay and the Apple Pay are also huge. All right, that's it. We're apparently done for another week. In some strange way, you've managed to stay with us for two solid hours. We thank you for that. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. And we will be back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 55 minutes after the hour. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And we should wish everybody a happy Turkey Day.
Happy Turkey Day, and we'll see you all on the other side of that with, well, here comes the Christmas music. Bye-bye.